Welcome to Federal Insights for October, sponsored by KPMG.
Hello and welcome to today's program. I'm Eric White. October marks Cybersecurity Awareness Month. Two organizations, the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, or CISA, and the National Cybersecurity Alliance co-lead this annual event. For what to expect and a walk through this year's toolkit, CISA team leader Aaron Shepley spoke with Federal News Network's Tom Temin.
So the key point of National Cybersecurity Awareness Month is to really focus on reaching out to the public and engaging them on cybersecurity awareness, teaching them about good cybersecurity best practices, and trying to invigorate the community to really participate and take proactive steps to change their cybersecurity habits.
Because I was watching an episode of Judge Judy the other day, and there was a woman who had taken money from another person for an apartment rental, but the woman who took the money had sent her credentials and banking information to someone she thought was trying to befriend her in Nigeria, and everyone almost fainted. You could even see the audience say, oh my God. So there's still a lot of people that haven't gotten the word on basic cybersecurity hygiene, aren't there?
That's absolutely correct. So I would say, you know, that sounds like the classic phishing campaign, kind of a play on the actual phishing, where, you know, there is someone trying to lure an innocent individual into something malicious, whether it's sharing personal information or sending money elsewhere. But that's absolutely correct. This is, you know, our month, not just from a government standpoint, but working with our federal agencies and the folks that work for those agencies, industry, academia, and really just communities across the nation to try to talk about cybersecurity, bring awareness to things like that, threat actor activity, but also what can individuals do to make sure that they are safe, that their families are safe, and kind of implement those best practices at home and in the workplace.
And I imagine this is also really important for small business. I mean, large corporations, they have their troubles with cybersecurity, as the headlines keep showing, but they ostensibly know what to do. But a lot of small businesses may be like family-owned situations, and they treat their online resources at work the way they do at home.
Yeah, absolutely. Particularly any, you know, small business or small local government that might be under-resourced when it comes to cybersecurity staff or money to implement cybersecurity activities. This toolkit not only is great for the individual, but for those that need to understand the best steps to implement to secure their data and be able to execute the activities of whatever their organization may be.
Yes, and you mentioned the toolkit, which I've been looking at earlier, and it's not a huge thing. It's about a 10-page PDF that you can download and print or keep online. What? How does it come to be, and what's in it?
Yeah, so I'm glad you said short and sweet. 10 pages. We tried to make it a little bit easier for folks to use, because really we're looking for champions within the community to take that and host an event or talk within their community about cybersecurity. So basically, the toolkit is an how-to guide. Whether it is, like I said, hosting an event or participating on social media, we're going to have a very active social media campaign during October. And we'd love organizations, individuals, frankly, anybody to participate as we talk about our overarching theme, as well as some of the topics that we'll be talking about throughout October.
So is this the kind of event that you encourage maybe local organizations, PTAs, churches, that type of thing to maybe host events to help their constituents
yes.
understand cyber better?
Yes, absolutely. So just kind of a quick stat. Last year, we had over 400 registered events. That's not necessarily something that we participated in, but that just kind of shows you the level of community support, whether it's a huge event that a Fortune 500 company does or something that a school does where they teach fifth graders about cyberbullying or online privacy.
Aaron Shepley is a team leader for National Cybersecurity Awareness Month at the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, speaking with Federal News Network's Tom Temin. We'll continue our interview with her after a quick break. I'm Eric White.
Disruption waits for no one. So what exactly are you waiting for? At KPMG, we help government agencies embrace new technologies and implement agile operations to meet the needs of a rapidly changing world. We help organizations advance in areas like digital transformation, cognitive analytics, cybersecurity, artificial intelligence, and much more. It's time to turn today's challenges into tomorrow's opportunities. Become future ready with KPMG. Visit futureReadyGovernment.com.
We continue our interview with Erin Shepley. She's a team leader with the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency. She spoke with Federal News Network's Tom Temin.
So 400 last year, sounds like you'd like to have maybe 400,000 types of events.
Yeah, absolutely. So this year, we did a little updating and we revised our campaign to keep it simple. Our overarching theme is Own It, Secure It, Protect It. That's going to be something that we use to message throughout the month. And really trying to resonate with the individual and make this a common conversation, not just within cybersecurity professional or within the cybersecurity field. So we're hoping that that theme will encourage additional folks who maybe haven't participated in years past to kind of take up and talk about cybersecurity during October.
And are DHS officials that might be located locally throughout the country, and they certainly are, and I guess other federal agencies that might be allied with you, such as NIST, are they available for local programs and maybe make a visit some evening here and there?
Yes. So we actually have quite a lot of field personnel. We have cybersecurity advisors, but we also have folks across the country that do a various number of tasks in support of our agency. So you'll often see them in local events across the country supporting whether, again, it's a local community, it's a local government, a state government, or industry that's hosting an event. But also we have some of our leadership here that likes to go around the country, talk about cybersecurity awareness, and attend some of the large events and activities that will be happening.
And I imagine local law enforcement might be part of the whole equation here, too, because sometimes things that happen online do rise to the level where you need to call law enforcement.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's a great point. So obviously, a great partner to DHS and the cybersecurity mission are our law enforcement partners, of course, those throughout DHS as well as the FBI. So we work hand in hand with them to kind of support activities across the country, but also actively working with associations like the International Association of Chiefs of Police and promoting cybersecurity through their forums.
Got it. And what else do people need to know about the guide? And in fact, I mentioned NIST a minute ago. Are they part of your, do they help you bake in the right best practices and latest threat types of data into this guide?
It's going to be light on threat and more about prevention and proactive activities. We, of course, utilize everything that NIST has published relative to their cybersecurity framework and the other activities. But really, a lot of the guide is about hashtag be cyber smart, which is going to be the hashtag that we're going to be using throughout October. And again, how folks can own it, secure it, and protect it using our resources to understand online privacy, implementation of strong passwords, and protecting their digital home. And those are just a few examples of some of the tip sheets that we've got on our website.
And what about different forms of public advertising, such as bus tails or billboards or even social media ads that are of a public surface nature?
So above and beyond the hashtag Be Cyber Smart that we'll be using throughout October, there will be a few things that we're working on. So I'd ask folks to stay tuned. But again, largely pushing activity through our official Twitter handles and utilizing that throughout October.
And what else should federal agencies and listeners in the contracting community know about Cybersecurity Awareness Month?
As either cybersecurity professionals or advocates of the cybersecurity field, or frankly, anyone that works in the federal government, encouraging you to check out our website. It's very easy to use. And bring the cybersecurity conversation home. Talk about it with your family. Make sure that you're implementing all of the best practices and implement those best practices in the workplace.
Erin Shepley is a team leader for National Cybersecurity Awareness Month at the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency. Coming up after the break, we'll hear from the head of CISA, Chris Krebs, to learn what else is on the agency's to-do list. I'm Eric White.
Innovation. Everyone says it. At KPMG, we know actions speak louder than words. For over 100 years, KPMG has helped federal agencies adapt to changing times with innovative approaches. Today, we're helping agencies advance in areas like cybersecurity, artificial intelligence, blockchain, cognitive analytics, and secure cloud. Let our past experience help propel your future forward more quickly and with greater agility and efficiency. Become future ready with KPMG. Visit futureReadyGovernment.com.
Last month, the Department of Homeland Security Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency hosted its second annual National Cybersecurity Summit. It's a chance for cyber officials with federal, state, and local governments, as well as those from the private sector, to highlight successes and opportunities for collective action. During the summit, Chris Krebs, director of CISA, held a press conference to lay out where the agency was headed as election season ramps up.
Thanks, everybody, for joining the gaggle. I think it's been so far a great, you know, almost full day, two half days of programming yesterday, a number of keynotes. Maybe not as announcement heavy as last year was up in New York, but that wasn't the point of this conference's summit. Was getting folks together and talking about the progress we've made in the last year and the places we need to go over the course of the next year with at least a near-term objective point of the 2020 election as a top priority. Was super excited to see the agreement out of the Senate on the $250 million for the states. Had a chance to talk to Secretary Paul Pate of Iowa and talk a little bit about that. So good start. The rest of the conference today continue to have really solid breakouts. Just left a great breakout on industrial control systems with Leslie Carhart of Dragos and Bryson Bort of Scythe. So that is another one of our real operational priorities in addition to elections, but industrial control system, and that's a great leadership space for CISA as an agency within the federal government. And then we close out today with Secretary of Defense Esper and Acting Secretary McAleenan talk a little bit about, I'm sure you'll hear a little bit about election security efforts across DOD and DHS and how we're working together, but also broader critical infrastructure cybersecurity issues. And then tomorrow, closing out with another set of solid breakouts, a job fair, which we're also really excited to have at this point. Well over 200 resumes in, and I'm hoping that we can hit a nice mark of 100 plus maybe temporary or tentative job offers. So for us, this is much about engaging our partners in the federal government, engaging our partners in industry, but also doing a little bit of recruiting and getting some good new talent into the agency.
During the presser, Krebs was asked about the newly appointed National Security Advisor, Robert O'Brien. With O'Brien's appointment, there were some calling for him to reestablish the role of National Cyber Coordinator in the White House. Krebs commented on whether he agrees with that group or not.
I think that Congress, so I think Congress in standing up CISA recognize that there needs to be a federal lead for cybersecurity. I think that's the role we're trying to play. I think that's what you're seeing today. You're seeing Department of Energy, National Security Agency, FBI. You are seeing the entirety of the federal government that plays in the cybersecurity arena is here. And we're all working side by side. So there is coordination. So don't take the lack of a coordinator for lack of coordination. I've said that before. But I am really excited to work with the National Security Advisor. Haven't had a chance to meet with him yet, obviously. But everything that I've heard from good friends that know him well is that he takes cybersecurity seriously. So I think we have a great opportunity here to continue up in our game. And it's a great time to have him on board, and particularly with the run-up to the 2020 election. I'm going to ask him what more we can do on cybersecurity together. I think a cybersecurity coordinator role in the function, the service, the value it provides depends on what kind of the time. So when it was first set up in 2009, 2010, you have to think about where DHS was in terms of its maturity as a cybersecurity agency. In part, the cybersecurity coordinator was doing some blocking and tackling to make sure that DHS could be effective and could engage across the interagency. Now, 10 years later, we're in a spot where a coordinator has a different job. It's not blocking and tackling. It's ensuring that we have the most effectiveness, or we're most effective coordinating policy and implementation across the interagency. So I think there's space. I mean, I'm telling you this. I will take anybody that wants in the federal agency that wants to play in this game. We will do an all-hands approach. So if a federal cybersecurity coordinator is in our future, then I really look forward to working with them.
Krebs also discussed what he's heard from the states who are looking for help from the federal government to secure their elections.
The way I see it, in the conversations I've had with secretaries of state is that of those majority states, so that it's the five states between Louisiana, South Carolina, Delaware, New Jersey, and what's the other one? Anyway, of the states that for the 2018 were not on paper or paper ballot backup, they're all moving towards having a paper ballot backup, whether through contracting actions or others. Now, I think there may be a state or two out there that's not going to get there, principally because of a funding. They don't have the funding at the state level. But in general, the market has already shifted towards some kind of paper ballot backup. So much so, the demand from states has influenced what the vendors are actually selling. And you saw the course of the summer, a number of the major vendors say that they're just not going to sell DREs at scale. They'll have some sort of accessibility version available. And I don't know if we necessarily need to legislate towards edge cases where you have a county here or there that may go by some DRE. I'm not sure that's the most effective approach for legislation. That said, I think that, as I mentioned with a good start, as I talk to secretaries of state and state election directors, the thing they want more than anything of funding, whether it comes from their state or whether it comes from the federal government, is consistency and something they can set their budgeting clocks by. Because if it's these inconsistent mass injections of cash every 10 years or 8 years, that creates some disruption in the state budgeting process. And what we, again, need is a very clear, I talked about this earlier this morning with Senator Warner, is we've got to have a very clear conversation on roles and responsibilities. We all know what Article 1, Section 4 of the Constitution says. States will control the time, place, and manner of elections. But if the federal government is going to play in this space, we have to be, you know, dependable partners. And so I think that's the next piece of this. Yes, 250, as the agreement reads, I think is a great step forward. But what's next? I think that's what we have to have some clear signaling from the federal government to states is. The number is going to be based on, I think, a couple of things. But first and foremost, and what I've been asking states to do is be very clear in what their kind of cost of risk management is. So if it's the state of New Jersey that needs to replace their DREs and that's going to cost $114 million, let Congress know, let their state legislatures know. And they do. They've been very clear partners. I was up in New Jersey 2 weeks ago and met with Secretary Wei and the state director, Bob Giles. And they are clearly communicating that up. So then we get, that's one state. Let's get all the states that need that help. Because when I think about funding and what's needed, I start, I think about three buckets of money that's going to be needed. The first is, what is that amount of money that's going to have to address the, and whether this is from the state or whether it's, I don't care where the money comes from. I've said that before. But the first bucket is, we have to address the risk in the system now. It's getting the DREs out, and more importantly, getting a system that has a paper ballot backup. So that's that immediate risk bucket. The second is what we talked about, is that dependable stream of funding, so that you can hire people against it, you can execute long-term service IT service contracts. What is that long-term play? And then the third, I think it's a good idea probably to have kind of an innovation fund. Like, where are the things that we can do, fund pilots for risk limiting audits in states? What are, if you go look at the National Academies of Sciences report last year, their recommendation on risk limiting audits was a 10-year timeline for pilots and implementation, which tells me that if the smartest people in the room that know how to do these things think it's gonna take 10 years, it would take 10 years to get a nationwide process, it means that we need to test some things out at a national level and state by state before we can get that. It's not going to happen overnight.
Ransomware attacks have been a major concern for states and cities, especially after many high-profile attacks were successfully executed. Krebs talks about how CISA is working with those state and local governments to protect their networks from ransomware attacks come election time.
So generally, I think when we go out and we talk generally about cybersecurity risks, then There's not a degree of precision that gets everybody engaged at the same time, at the same level. But when you have a really acute risk, when you talk about, I mean, I'm not aware of a single person that's shrugging off Texas and Louisiana and the 23 counties and the seven parishes. Everyone I've talked to since those two events snapped to and is sufficiently concerned where I'm not terribly concerned that we're going to have much difficulty in getting as many, you know, if not as close to 50, if not all 50 as possible. But to kind of roll it back a little bit, I think more than anything, the ransomware initiative continues to be an example of how we as a election security community, where DHS in support of state and locals, is evolving our approach. We're beyond the just figuring out, you know, who's who and, you know, who's sitting across the table. Now it's like, okay, we're comfortable around talking about the basics. How do we take it to the next level and really start doing some threat modeling? What's a worst case scenario 1 month in front of, you know, out in front of an election? And we need to do more of that. We need to start looking at, okay, ransomware is an availability attack. What are the other availability attacks? What are the integrity attacks? What's a election night reporting website disruption look like? And what do we need to do to not just secure or harden that system, but also increase a little bit, or put a little bit of resilience into the system?
When a cyber attack occurs, there can be a bit of confusion on who's in charge of response. Enter the National Cyber Incident Response Plan. Krebs explains how the plan helps with creating a consistent response from the federal government so states can know what kind of help they can expect.
So the National Cyber Incident Response Plan is probably it's not appropriately named. So it's because it's not an actionable plan in and of itself. It is something closer to a framework that gives a very broad overview of general responsibilities across the federal agencies between CISA now, FBI, law enforcement, and the intelligence community. But what we need underneath it is the implementing doctrine. If you go look on the physical side with FEMA and the National Response Framework, and the operational plans underneath it, and the emergency support functions, and the exercises, and the drills, there is an incredible wealth of doctrine, experience, and understanding. We have to develop that underneath the National Cyber Response Plan. We need to know that if, again, in Texas, if it had been 254 counties, what can the states clearly anticipate coming from the federal government, whether it's CISA, whether it's the National Guard, whether it's from other agencies, it doesn't matter, but we just need to be clear on the expectations of what they're going to do, what we're going to do, and how we're going to solve the problem together.
That's Chris Krebs, Director of the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, speaking at a press briefing at the National Cybersecurity Summit last month. If you missed any of this episode, you can find it online. Go to federalnewsnetwork.com and search Federal Insights. I'm Eric White.
Thank you to listening to Federal Insights for October, sponsored by KPMG on Federal News Radio, part of the Federal News Network.
Disruption waits for no one. So what exactly are you waiting for? At KPMG, we help government agencies embrace new technologies and implement agile operations to meet the needs of a rapidly changing world. We help organizations advance in areas like digital transformation, cognitive analytics, cybersecurity, artificial intelligence, and much more. It's time to turn today's challenges into tomorrow's opportunities. Become future ready with KPMG. Visit futurereadygovernment.com. Innovation. Everyone says it. At KPMG, we know actions speak louder than words. For over 100 years, KPMG has helped federal agencies adapt to changing times with innovative approaches. Today, we're helping agencies advance in areas like cybersecurity, artificial intelligence, blockchain, cognitive analytics, and secure cloud. Let our past experience help propel your future forward more quickly and with greater agility and efficiency. Become future ready with KPMG. Visit futurereadygovernment.com.